Track 5, Norfolk, Messing About in Boats. Now, any of you who are familiar with the book Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome will enjoy our next piece. Maggie and Tony are here to tell you about the exploits of some intrepid sailors navigating our waterways in the later 1800s. Ahoy there, you two!
When the weather is fine, then you know it's a sign for messing about on the river. If you take my advice, there's nothing so nice as messing about on the river.
Let's take a trip on the River Yare some 150 years ago. This is from the Norfolk Record Office and includes notes from one of the participants, which Tony and I will read for you. On Monday, the 26th of August, 1878, four friends, including the artist Ernest Arthur Freeman, set off from New Mills, Norwich, on a five-day canoe trip down the Yare and up the Waveney via the New Cut. The tourist industry on the broads and rivers of Norfolk and Suffolk was in its infancy in the second half of the 19th century, but was to develop rapidly with easier rail access. They kept an informal log in a notebook, which has survived, but, unfortunately, the sketches they made along the way have not. The canoe, as a leisure craft, was introduced to Britain in 1858 by Scottish explorer John MacGregor after an expedition in North America, and was still a notable sight. At Reedham, many people turned out to watch their departure, and the young ones, a family yacht party on the Waveney,
scarcely knew what to make of the craft.
Even some of who worked on the river were unfamiliar with the canoe, as when they passed through Gelderston Lock.
The lock keeper was evidently not in the habit of passing such craft, as he let in such a lot of water at first that our vessels became almost unmanageable, and we went spinning round and round with the whirling waters.
Nothing was booked in advance, and beds and food were found in the inns along the banks of the rivers, many of which still exist. On Monday, they had beer and biscuits at the
famous Thorpe Gardens,
now the Rush Cutters at River Green in Norwich, and enjoyed a
substantial dinner.
Lunch at the Woods End Inn at Bramerton. At 5 p.m. they stopped at the Ferry House, now the Beecham Arms at Buckingham, for a
consultation,
and decided to press on to Cantley. Unfortunately, the Red House, now the Reed Cutter at Cantley, was full, so they took their bags and walked a mile to the Cock. On Tuesday, they stopped at the Nelson at Reedham for bread and cheese lunch, before pushing on to the Duke's Head in Somerleyton, where they stayed that night. The pub could offer beds, but not dinner, so, after changing, they caught the train to Lowestoft, which is described as
a most enchanting spot.
The town was
full, and the pier especially gay with the evening costumes of the highly respectable folks who throng this fashionable watering place.
They caught the last train back to Somerleyton at 9:20 p.m. At least one member of the party had done this trip before, as when they decided to stop at the Duke's Head, he
took us up a creek where he had left his boat in the charge of cottagers on a previous excursion.
The White Lion in Beccles, where they spent Wednesday night, is no longer an inn, but the name can still be seen, although painted over. They stayed both Thursday and Friday nights at the Fleece in Bungay. There's a large meander in the Waveney after Bungay, which is not easily navigable, and it took them 5 hours to reach Hersham. So, after much debate, the decision was taken to return to Bungay for their final night, as the current would be with them. The journey back to Bungay was
most exciting and excessively rapid. The boathouse at Bungay was just outside the station, and they chartered a covered truck which would be put on the goods train to Thorpe Station on Saturday morning. On Saturday morning, they loaded and packed the canoes into the wagon themselves and then returned to the Fleece for lunch. After lunch, they were apprehended by a local antiquarian who insisted on showing them the Borough Well. He was a mortal and kept them talking so long they had to sprint for the train.
Their visit to Lowestoft was probably the highlight of the trip in terms of entertainment. Other diversions included a demonstration of two clockwork black dancing girls at the Cock in Cantley, whilst at Beccles, the volunteer artillery, headed by their band, marched down the street and were a
smart body of men, and their band was exceptionally good.
Thursday was market day at Bungay, so the fleece was unable to provide food until 6 p.m, when
the market tea
would be served. They sat down with 15 or so farmers and ate
a rare good bit of beef,
carved by the chairman. It seems to have been a jolly affair. Other diversions included swimming in the river and a romp with the pub dog at Summer Leighton. They suffered the usual trials of holidaying in an English summer, wind and rain. They set off in
beautiful August sun
on Monday, but Tuesday saw rain just before Reedham, and they got very wet despite having
rigged up
the waterproofs. Wednesday was windy, which made the water very rough, but the canoes
floated over the waves.
Thursday was sunshine and showers, but Friday there was a severe storm.
Doubtless that which touched nearly every part of England on that day and did much damage in London by flooding.
They sheltered for an hour under some overhanging trees, but the storm did not abate, and they were
fully occupied in nailing the knee coverings to the deck, as the high winds would have blown them away had they not been fastened. The sponges were kept constantly on the go, sopping up the water on the coverings and thus helping to keep out the rain. We weathered the storm beautifully. The knee coverings kept out the water splendidly, and our black waterproof capes kept our bodies dry.
The equipment they carried included a paddle each and an iron spike with a ring, to which was attached about 10 yards of cord, which was used to tie up. Black waterproof haversacks held clothes, and whatever wouldn't fit in these was in tins. Sketching apparatus, novels, pen, ink, logbook, writing paper, latter seldom used. They also carried a
brandy flask,
which
was the only medicine chest.
They wore white jerseys or shirts with something else over the top if wet or cold, and a straw hat or
cloth helmet,
a
wrapper,
was worn around the neck and shoulders to protect from sun and chilly breezes, and ordinary trousers and shoes. This trip preceded Jerome K. Jerome's trip on the Thames by 10 years. All they were missing was the dog.
So I'll leave you right now to cast off your bow, to go messing about on the river.
Well, that was certainly a very vivid and entertaining account of a fascinating adventure. Thank you, Maggie and Tony. And if, like me, you've been racking your brains trying to remember the name of that dog in Three Men in a Boat, it's just come to me. Montmorency.